Support for this podcast comes from the patrons at patreon.com/FMLFPL.
Okay! Welcome to FMLFPL, I'm Alon.
This is Walsh.
Here we are. We can see the light at the end of the international break tunnel.
Yeah, we're potting on a Tuesday evening, so we've only got a few short sleeps until game week 8 kicks off. And I think this episode, we really just want to get stuck into some very prescient FPL topics. Look at who got injured during international breaks. Look at some FPL philosophy questions and just kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did most of the last game week on last pot, so we're just looking ahead on this.
Yeah, we're not going to touch that. Everyone knows what happened. It was 3 weeks ago.
It was 10 years ago, yeah.
So where do you want to start?
I want you to start. I feel like you have some things up your sleeve that you're like excited to talk about.
You are not wrong.
I'm reading your the intonation of your voice is like, I want to get fucking stuck in. And I'm like, okay, what's going on?
I think one thing that came up on the Slack this week that was phenomenal, and NPass brought it up, but really the goalkeeper position.
Yeah.
Kind of something when it's international break, I always find myself looking at the nooks and crannies of my team or strategy that I've been playing since game week one this season, trying to find things that I maybe missed or overlooked. And I think the goalkeeper spot's definitely one of those where very stubbornly was thinking, okay, I'm not going to spend more than 8-5 on the goalkeeping position. I'm going to just get whatever 4-5 and just some 4-0 fuckfest and just put them in every week. But there are a lot of points to be had there. We're seeing a lot of the 5-5 premium goalkeepers, Courtois coming up there, De Gea top of the ranks. Cech's been doing well, and you know a lot of the 5-5 premium teams are now the cheapest, most nailed route into those defenses. Unlike before, when they were priced at 6 million, the goalkeepers. Now that they've been dropped down to 5-5, you look at a team like Chelsea where...
Yeah, they're pretty much all the cheapest, most nailed, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have the exception of Jones for United, but
yeah.
I mean, the game tried to price the goalkeeper less than all the defenders.
Yeah, they did that for a reason, that which they did a good job there.
Yeah, totally nailed that. But I'm just wondering if we missed a trick, because every year at the end of the season, we look back and see, you know, last year was with Heaton when he was priced at 4-5 and he's at the summit. But we're always looking at really there's one, maybe two, 4-5 price goalkeepers in the top five. But the rest of them are all premium, you know, they're on premium teams. So we always take for granted that we're like, oh yeah, well, you get the 4-5 in, there's more value. But that also assumes that you pick the right one, which is easy to say in hindsight, or an easy kind of thing to just
right.
Lay
if,
down.
If you have Fabianski or Lossel this year, then you're like, yeah, easy. But
yeah,
most people.
But if
you don't,
yeah. I mean, I've been sitting here with Foster, and he's been kind of fucking bad. And when you look at teams like United, City, Chelsea, and the fixtures that they have upcoming, is it that bad to spend 9-5 on the goalkeeping spot instead of 8-5? I don't know. I mean, we always talk about getting save points, and the goalkeepers on premium teams don't often do. Bonus points, the teams on premium teams don't often do, the goalkeepers. But at the end of the day, what you really need are clean sheet points. I mean, 4 points for a clean, if you get one save point in addition to, I mean, getting 6 or 7 is a lot better than getting 1 to 3, which most 4 or 5 goalkeepers are on mid-table or lower sides. And that's more often than not what they do. So just kind of giving it a think and looking over the budget. And you always think, okay, well, if you go Elliott instead and you save 1.5 million, then that makes you turn your, you know, 4-5 defender into David Luiz. But Steven Ward's good. So is that better? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's two main things are sticking out to me. And one is that there's always the perception that the goal is to spend all 100 plus of your 100 million budget. And routinely we see every season that the highest scoring team is not spending all of their budget is one thing. And the second thing is that I guess like a question to answer your question kind of is like, are the clean sheets at the rate that they're currently going at sustainable? Or do we think that this is just an insane, weird season where this won't keep happening and some teams will score more goals and some teams will allow more goals? Because, like, there's just – United has a clean sheet in every game but one. City has a clean sheet in every game but two. Spurs, Arsenal, Huddersfield are on four. Like, there's just so many cleans. And there's so many teams that are scoring – I mean, the majority of the league is scoring a goal per game or less on average, which is ridiculously low. So I guess my question back at you is, like, which is more sustainable? Which do you think will keep up? Do you think it's the powers have tilted so far to the top of the table that we're just going to see United rack in 20 clean sheets this year, and City and Spurs and Chelsea are going to approach the same? Or do you think things will level out and, you know, teams like Palace will score some goals and Bournemouth will score more than four goals, and you know what I mean? So I don't know. I have a hard time, like, judging which of those things is more real, you know?
Yeah, I think the number one thing that I keep looking at are really just the strikers. Like, looking at the list of strikers in FPL, there are no good strikers. There are five good strikers on the four or six best teams or whatever. There are no good mid-price strikers. There are no cheap strikers. The reason for that is that every team that are going to be placed 6th to 20th have fucking shit-ass strikers. And it's a microcosm of the actual league performances, where a lot of the teams are just kind of bad and they have bad goal scorers,
yeah,
and they're not scoring goals.
It seems like there's abnormal amount of teams that are just not even attempting to score goals. Like Swansea, Brighton, Huddersfield. I mean, we know, like, West Brom always park, Newcastle, Burnley, kind of Everton. Like, these teams are all, like, kind of conceding possession, parking. They have one or two chances per game max, and that's it. And it's weird.
There are a lot of really good clean sheet fixtures just looking up and down the league. Like you mentioned, you didn't even mention Palace or Southampton, also bereft of goals. So, I mean, I'm inclined to just take the information that we have and not suspect it to completely hit a 180.
Yeah, seven weeks feels like a pretty sizable sample size when you're considering
it's good,
like,
enough.
It's like a fifth of the season.
Yeah, it's enough games to try and pick the information that you've got so far and then build your team around that. And to me, it's saying that the premium defenses are going to keep keeping clean sheets and that a lot of the poor to mid-table sides are going to continue to struggle for goals. But bringing it back to the goalkeeper position, I just think that in the absence of any real mid-priced midfielders and a lot of us going to a 4-3-3 formation, it lends us to being able to spend an extra million in the goalkeeping spot. And
yeah, it's true.
Getting someone like De Gea or Courtois when we're having 2, 4, 5 midfielders in and we have 1, 4, 5 defender and 4, you know, 5 million plus, we can budget it a little bit easier. And while there will always be value, and maybe, you know, Pope is maybe standing out as the best 4-5 goalkeeper, maybe Fabianski right now.
And I think Elliott's about to have a nice run because I do think Newcastle's a good defense. Yeah, those guys at the end of the season that you mentioned before, Courtois, Ederson, De Gea, Lloris, they're going to be top, no question.
Yeah, and then I think it's kind of that, like, if you're going to spend 8-5 when we know that Elliott is nailed for Newcastle, then you might as well just spend 8 and just start him. Like you said, his fixtures are getting a little bit better. There's not 0.5 in that to me.
Yeah.
To any of the 4 or 5 goalkeeping teams, none of them are so much better than Newcastle that I want to spend an extra outlay to get that goalkeeper in. So the one thing that just was, like, annoying with Elliott is that Rafa sets his defense up so, like, they don't concede that many shots. And
he's been right around
getting one save point, but he's had 4 saves at most all season, which is terrible.
And that was against Spurs, you know, so it's like a high-powered offense or high-powered attack that he's facing. Yeah, that is the bummer because usually, as you said at the beginning of this, like, you get the cheap guys because they rack up the saves and they – are on for bonus and they occasionally get cleans. But yeah. I don't know. I will say that at least in one of the games that Newcastle has kept a clean, Elliott got a bonus point. So, you know, they're still bad enough that he could get bonus even if he's not getting enough a bunch of saves. So I hope I hope this run of like 9 or 10 next game weeks he can bring me some points.
Yeah, it's just kind of like thinking of Jakubovic from last season when they're conceding. He's still getting 4-pointers because he's making 6 saves, you know? And that you're not going to get that.
And Pickford, yeah.
Yeah, Pickford, same thing. He's getting 4-pointers when he's just making saves when they're conceding. So that's a big difference than getting 2 or 1 point. So
yeah, and no one's really doing that this year, right? I mean, I guess Fabianski is the closest, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, not really. Pope's been doing okay, but... Goalkeeping's just been very frustrating. It's very on the forefront of my mind just because whenever I feel like I get a clean sheet out of my goalkeeper or if I get, you know, 7 or 8 out of my goalkeeper, I always get a green arrow in a good week.
Yeah, it feels like weird free points or something.
Yeah, it's like everyone is just playing with the same shitty-ass fuck-it goal, and if your guy gets a clean or your guy gets points, you're swimming that week. But I don't know why I'm always so reluctant to spend on the position. I know it has a low ceiling.
Well,
but
yeah, it's the lowest scoring position by far. I mean, there are reasons, but I think
clean sheets are clean sheets. You know, points are points, and I have an easier time finding 4 or 5 defender rotators who have some attacking output that I'd rather like put in, or spending 9 instead of 10 on my forward, or 8 instead of 9 on my midfield, you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah, there's always sacrifices that can be made. And yeah, I mean, I think it's a natural thing for us to try and spend, like I said, all of our money on like attack and stuff like that. But as the in vogue formation is kind of going like 4-3-3 or maybe even 5 defenders, we're spending less money. You just can't spend that much money on defense, not compared to attackers. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, those top guys, and I wish I had them. I have literally 0 clean sheets on the season for my goalkeeping position, so kill myself.
You and Ray, it's not good. But realistically, it's just like a talking point. I think it's international break pod, just trying to get yourself thinking about some spots on your team that maybe you don't spend that much time on, which is...
And if people are on wild card, you know? Like, there's a lot of people on wild card this week, and, you know, you got to be thinking about these guys. And you can't really make a tangible argument that anyone's going to outscore the top 4 or 5 keepers, or the priciest 4 or 5 keepers.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, realistically, if you're not thinking critically about every spot on your team, then you know, you're doing yourself a disservice. It's a goalkeeping position, something to shout.
Yeah, good stuff.
All right, that's that box. Let's go over to your favorite team in the world, Liverpool, with Mane dead for life again, long-term injury. What are your thoughts on Liverpool?
Yeah, we've all started getting so many questions in. Faith No Moreno, which is such a good name, said, what do you think of Coutinho Firmino prospects? Mane's out until the end of November. A lot of people wrote in with the same concerns. I mean, there's obviously a chance that Klopp starts Sturridge and Firmino's out wide and Salah's the other wing and Coutinho stays in midfield, etc. I think for FPL prospects, it's really good that Sturridge had a nightmare against Newcastle, because I think Firmino will just be straight on down the middle. I think Coutinho will be left wing, just like he was all of last year, and Salah will be right wing. And that's kind of like, when you looked at the Salah transfer in the summer, that was kind of one of the big positives, was that, like, because when Mane went away for AFCON last year and then he got injured, Liverpool were just so much worse without Mane and without his pace. And with Salah, it's like, okay, now we have 2 guys that can do that at least, you know? So we're not like in nightmare land if one of them go down. So I just think it goes back to that front 3, you know, and we'll be fine. And I think Coutinho is still a great pick, maybe even a better pick now that he's in the front 3. I think Firmino eventually will come back into form, although no fucking chance in hell I'd bring him in now. And I think Salah is still just absolute great pick, like, his position out of everyone is not changing at all. So, yeah, I think FPL perspective, you know, Coutinho and Salah are still really good.
What about the Ox?
Yeah, I mean, I'm captaining the Ox this week, so...
Triple captain the Ox.
Yeah, it's so funny that, like... I mean, everyone was saying it when we transferred the Ox in, but, like, in what world did he ever think he'd play central midfielder? I just don't... It's like, we have, like, six guys in front of him. Like, Lallana's not even fit, and he's still... You know, Ox is still, like, not even sniffing the midfield. You know what I mean?
I mean, you put Lallana on the pitch in crutches or a wheelchair before you start.
Nailed on, dude. Absolutely. No question.
So I think the main more FPL question is Salah versus Coutinho. So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You're
that's more of a tit, yeah.
So you're shouting Coutinho coming into the left side in the front three, and they're going to go with the midfield three with Hendo, Chan, Wijnaldum, probably. Sturridge should be on the bench unless if Klopp wants to, you know, be a sadist and struggle to score one goal a game, he could start Sturridge again.
Yeah, you could always do that.
You have a 0.2 difference, which is not even something worth sneezing about. Do you think that the lack of pace for Mane and the lack of dynamism up front without Phil in the midfield three supplying them makes him a better or worse shout than him playing in the front three compared to Salah?
That was confusing wording to me. Say it again.
I don't know what I said.
Are you asking me if Phil is better at left wing or Phil is better at midfield?
I'm asking basically.
Okay. We're getting loose early. Yeah, okay.
This is going wrong. Basically, with Mane out, you have less firepower up front.
Yes.
When Mane's in, you have Phil in the midfield three. So he is supplying them, and then he's also taking his pot shots from distance, and he's still, you know, taking his indirect set pieces. Is that better for him, or is it better for him to be in the front three without Mane? Maybe more.
I think it's still better for him to be in the front three because of his just like kind of natural reluctance to actually get in the box. He'd rather just shoot from outside the box. When he's in the front three, he's just so much further forward all the time. I think like the most underrated part of his game is his like work rate and his tackling and stuff. So when he's in midfield, he'll track back and go deep and go get the ball and try and link play. But when he's really just like left winger, left forward even, he's just always up there, you know, just begging to be cut in on his right foot and whip one in. And even though he loves a shot outside the box, last year he was shooting inside the box more often than this year just by nature being that far forward. You know what I mean? So I think that's just better for Phil. I mean, we didn't really get to see the four together to see if Phil was gonna, you know, be like getting more assists and less shots or anything like that. They barely played together. So I think it's just better for him. It's probably more comfortable for him at this point, and I think it's just good. I mean, I think they're both really good picks. I guess I would lean towards Coutinho. Just for more proven success. I mean, he was so good last year. FPL, he's been getting better in FPL for every season. And now, assuming he's in the front three, I think it's great for him. But there is a little bit of a chance that he's not in the front three. And I don't know, our attack could just be really bad.
Yeah, I mean, stats tell you that Liverpool attack is worse without Mane. Doesn't make a rocket scientist to think that, but I think if anything, if you have your Liverpool midfielder already in place, you just got to hold.
Hold your guy. Yeah, they're both really good picks.
Yeah, but there's no need to double if you're wild carding. I would not fault the wild card team to not have any of them because there are a lot of other good players to pick, and Liverpool attack is a lot more shit when Mane's not in there. So it's not surprising to think that, you know, they've got the next couple fixtures are tough, and then even those easy bus fixtures without Mane, they could struggle. So I suspect some more of the same from Liverpool, struggling to score more than two goals a game.
I don't know. I think it'd be foolish to not have a midfielder on wild card. I have to disagree there. I mean, Mane didn't play against Burnley or Leicester. They scored four goals in those two games. You know, like the Salah and Coutinho, the guys we're talking about, Coutinho double returned against Leicester and scored against Newcastle. Salah scored against Leicester, scored against Burnley. Like, they're still just going to be good I think, like, you're not going to see Salah getting in any different sort of positions because Mane's not in the team. Even though I rate Mane higher than him, and I think Mane's really, really good, I still think the front three of Coutinho, Firmino, Salah is just going to keep shooting a lot and creating a lot of chances and doing the same sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree. I just think that you guys always struggle when Mane's not in there. And, you know, you cite the Leicester game with the three goals you hang your hat on, but realistically, you got one against Newcastle, one against Burnley, one against Palace. You know, you take your games, you know, you four against Arsenal, which is nice, but it's a Jekyll and Hyde situation with Liverpool midfield and Liverpool attack full stop going back to the end of last season. I wouldn't fault a team for not on wild card, not picking one of them.
That's crazy to me.
They're still up price at a premium. And when you can get someone like David Silva, Sterling, someone in City for $1 million.
Salah
million
returns
less.
Every week. You know, it's like.
Yeah, no, he's been doing fine, but he's also, again, at a premium. Do you think he's going to really do a lot better than Eriksen on a fully settled side? They have United and Spurs coming up. They have buses coming up. They're in theory better than they proved to be time and time again. And it seems like they're in that rut that they haven't snapped out of struggling to score the first goal, struggling to get it together, and they've been having poor European performances, poor league performances, injuries.
Damn, you are buying into the media hype full.
No, it's not media hype. These are facts.
No, I mean, this is media hype. We're talking about FPL, and you're talking about their like European form. I don't give a fuck. Salah returns every week in FPL. He's third overall. He's a really, really good pick. FPL only.
Yeah, no, and I have him, and I'm fine with him, but I'm not faulting a team for not putting him in your wildcard team. I'm talking myself out of why he's good. I still think he's going to get into those positions and still score and return and be fine.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of players to choose from, so that's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
man.
Okay. I just think there's not that many midfielders that are actually like, you know, there's Eriksen, David, Richarlison, Alexis, I guess. There's not that many guys.
We're only fitting two premiums in our teams, so that's two players. So we could talk about Hazard and Alexis maybe if they're going to come into the fold.
We should talk about that. Everyone wants to talk about them.
Yeah, I mean, Eriksen's there. The City boys are there, but we're not going 3-4-3 with a light defense and a lot of money in midfield with a cheap third striker. We have two premium midfielders in our team, so it makes the slots a lot more contentious and a lot more difficult. So, let's go over to Hazard and Alexis.
We should talk about Hazard because everyone basically in all of the FPL world sucks Hazard's dick all the time, except you. So why?
First of all,
you're the Hazard hater.
Well, okay, he's never a captaincy option. So if you're paying over 10 for someone who's never a captaincy option, that immediately devalues that player on your team.
And for people who don't know what we're talking about, just look at his past. He scores very, very unpredictably and inconsistently. You know, when
like
he scores,
games,
it's a huge
like,
haul. But he's like, not going to score in like home bankers. He's not like you're not captaining him home Palace where he scores a brace or something. He scores his braces in weird bad games or on paper bad fixtures, and that's when he gets his haul. It's just not like, it's not a Kane, it's not Lukaku, like
and he's just not really that lethal. I mean, he doesn't really have braces in him. He's not going to, unless if he gets one on a pen and then he gets one in open play. His shot statistics throughout his career have just never been that prolific, like where he's taking so many shots and he's just increasing the likelihood of him getting returns from goals.
Right.
And he takes, you know, maybe two a game, and he's really good when he shoots, but the volume's not there. So he doesn't have those hat tricks or braces in him. And again, he's 10-5. He's the second most expensive midfielder in the game. And
yeah, he's the same price as Jesus. He's more expensive than Morata and Lacazette. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, they have a sea of green fixtures coming up, and he's definitely going to get points, but he's always going to be the player I would look at to downgrade to free up funds to do something else, because you're not captaining him and you're paying 10-5 on him, and you can only afford so many players like that. The other thing this year I think that is even more of a detractor for him is that you have Lukaku and Kane, who both are absolutely killing it, and they're 11 or over, both of them. So it makes it even that much more difficult to fit in a third 10-plus million player in your team. But also that Morata's cheaper, and he's obviously better, on the albeit you have a small sample size. He already has a hat trick in him. Granted, he's a little bit injured right now, but if you're looking at those two on a straight swap, I mean, give me Captain Morata and a home banker all day. He's a very captainable asset.
And you didn't even mention the City boys. I mean, Aguero will be back eventually, but Jesus, in the meantime, is also, you know, same price. Yeah. He's very captainable in a good fixture.
I mean, Morata has 8 returns, and he's only started 6 or 5 of the 7 games so far, or he got subbed off the last one. He's playing limited minutes, and he has 8 returns in 7 game weeks. So you cannot do better than that. We know that his international qualities, he's a fucking world-class player. He's fucking from on Real. They didn't get him from Getafe. So when you have someone like Morata who's cheaper than Hazard, it's not there's no question there. So there's so many things stacked against Hazard. And like, oh, good, he fucking scored against Cyprus today. Like, let's bring him in. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't fucking matter. It's ridiculous.
People love shouting out that shit. Like, every, United fan when Lukaku scores against Cyprus on Twitter is always, freaking out. Like, oh, Lukaku, he scores every game. Like, dude, oh, my God. How many games does Belgium need to win, 8-0 against the worst country in the world before we, don't just ignore all of this shit?
They're always in a group with Cyprus, Gibraltar, and San Marino.
Yeah, right. Luxembourg.
I feel like those are the teams they play exclusively.
Yeah, it does seem that way.
I mean, that's basically my Hazard thing. He's going to get points. And you want to just set and forget.
That dissimilar to Kev. Who we both had to start the season, and we were both like, we're going to hold him long term, no question. We both obviously transferred him out, and now he's flying. But if you hold Hazard really long term, talking multiple months, like you had to do with Kev to reap his benefits, then he's going to get points. He's consistently at the end of the season among the top midfielders. But if you're looking for some sort of if you're looking at these green fixtures and looking at maybe captaining him or just bringing him in for a little and then transferring him out, then you're doing Hazard very wrong and you will not be happy, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is Eriksen. If Eriksen, now he's at 9.7, but he started off a million cheaper. Eriksen is the least sexy FPL player you can get. I had him in game week 1. I kept him through wildcard. I still have him. And who's the number one point scoring for midfielders? Eriksen. He's going to be there, but he's not a captaincy option. At 9.5,
right,
that's
he's
more
similar.
Palatable.
Yeah.
That's more palatable. But at 10.5, you need to be able to captain that player on home bankers. You need to be able to have that captaincy rotation if you're spending that much money on a slot in your team. You don't have that with Hazard. So it's a tough one. But
it's
again,
tough.
I think if you can find
a way to bring him in, yeah. I mean, he's gonna have his fair share of one goal – clean sheet,
max bonus, 10 pointer,
10 or 11 pointer, and that's just what he does. But so when's it going to come? I have no idea.
I want to segue with this because I think it's a similar thing with Alexis, and granted the price points are even that much more drastically different, 10.5, 11.9, but
11.9
both of these players are absolute rock bottom differentials at this point. No one has either in their teams. No active managers really have either.
Yeah.
I'm a lot more intrigued by Alexis because he is someone I feel like you can pinpoint when he's going to score his goals. I feel like he's very good in away games when they're playing on the counter. And I feel like he is an explosive captaincy option. And he's someone where I'm looking at the near term about a way to chunk rise. He's the kind of player that's not going to – he's going to get double-digit 15-pointers or he has braces in him because of his stats. And they've got at Watford, at Everton, home Swansea in the next 3. No one has him. And he's the kind of player that is more interesting to me than Hazard, just because I think you can captain him in realistically all of those games.
So yeah, if you're on wildcard, he's super interesting. I mean, it really comes down to Alexis versus Lukaku or Jesus or something like that. Because you got to have Kane, right? We both agree on that. Kane is, if I'm on wild card, the first name in my team sheet, no question. And then there's not, you can't really have more than three of these guys. So you're either going to have Kane plus one heavy hitting striker and Alexis, or you're going to have just Kane and like two heavy hitting midfielders, something like that, and a mid price forward or something. But yeah, it's super hard to weigh. I don't know how to weigh like Alexis versus Jesus. But I think one thing that you kind of came around on last year when you were going 3-5-2 is that midfielders just get so many more points. Like they're good on bonus. They get the extra points for the goals. They get the extra points for the clean sheets, which add up. So I could definitely see a world where Alexis is outscoring Lukaku and Jesus, who are the guys he's really competing with, especially over these next three, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's easy. Yeah, definitely, I think that's possible.
Very and possible.
It's just the kind of thing that you need to look at him now because his stats are getting back up there from the last game.
His stats from last game are fucking crazy.
Yeah, and he's almost playing centrally. I mean, the formation, he just has free run, and he was getting up there ahead of Lacazette a lot of times, and he's just shooting so much. So
yeah, it's kind of like a 5-3-2. Like, it's not really, he's not really left wing. I agree with you. I think it's kind of him and Lacazette are the two forwards, one midfielder behind them, which will be Ozil. This game, last game, was Iwobi. And then there's the two central midfielders, and then there's the back five, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's playing centrally a little bit, and he's just looking good. So I think Alexis is definitely viable.
There's also the Lacazette argument, which is not that dissimilar to Morata versus Hazard, though. You know, like, he didn't return against Brighton, but he scored two goals against West Brom. He's still really good, and he's 1.5 million cheaper, which is pretty crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, the things I see different is like Lacazette's getting subbed every game, which, you know, I feel like.
Yeah, and he's not selfish like
he's
Alexis.
He's not selfish. He floats in and out of games, and he's also not done it away so far. So
yeah, that's true. He's much less proven, yeah.
Alexis is just a proven asset. Morata's kind of reversed that, where he's just been absolutely prolific so far. And he's the tip at the end of the spear for Chelsea, whereas the tip at the end of the spear for Arsenal is Alexis always. And Lacazette's going to be feeding off scraps of whatever Alexis will give him, kind of, I think, you know.
The way all of Arsenal works, it seems like. And
yeah.
He fucking shot 8 times last week.
Yeah, but it's 11-9 is out of control expensive. I mean, he's the second most expensive player in the game. So, like you're saying, you can only have so many of these premium assets. And
yeah, you start with him and Kane, and fuck, yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's tough to build around that. So that's why I think with Alexis, it's more of picking a short-term window if you want to cap him in a couple games and then downgrade him and redistributing the funds elsewhere, because it just imbalances the side so much.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm interested in Alexis. Maybe I'll bring him in on like a free hit one of these upcoming weeks.
Yeah, everyone should be interested in him.
Week 10, Kane is fucking at Old Trafford. I'm going to free hit in Alexis for home Swansea and captain him.
All right, we'll talk about that on the podcast.
Talk about that 10 pods from now. That's on, though.
So there are a couple more game theory things I want to talk about. I think another big topic right now is really looking at City assets versus Chelsea assets, specifically in defense.
Philip Nielsen had that exact question. He said, is it worth taking hits to bring in Chelsea City players as quick as possible, or too much of a gamble? And he just wanted our thoughts on Nima to Otamendi or Luiz. What's more valuable, City or Chelsea defense? It's so tough. They're the two teams, though, right now.
Yeah, Noel and Arshir also on Slack were talking about it. So let's start at the defense. The one thing that keeps standing out to me when I keep looking at it is the City defenders are so much cheaper than the Chelsea defenders.
Yeah, because going into the season, I mean, honestly, incorrectly by our mind, because we were always believers in City defense, but going into the season, the wider perspective of the world in EPL is that Chelsea's the best defense in the league, hands down, no one can touch them. So all their defenders are the fucking most expensive things ever. And that City is like a meh defense, but a top team, which is, you know, obviously not the case.
Yeah, they've been debunking it with Pep. I mean, we've got the center backs now, 5-6, 5-7 with Stones, Otamendi. The company probably won't play again until 2020.
Actually, like, the quotes about company are so reminiscent of fucking Danny Rose. It's just he's won't be involved for Belgium. He didn't make one training session for a month. It's like, okay, he's fucking dead.
He's going to like Antarctica to have penguin fetuses rubbed on his calves.
Yeah, blood transfusion after blood transfusion, all the babies.
Felix Magath's rubbing cheese on him all over his body. It's like, so I mean, when you have those players at 5-6, 5-7, and they have five cleans on the bounce, and through 7 fit game weeks or 8 or wherever the fuck we are right now, it's so cheap. When you're looking at the same thing of someone like David Luiz, who is a red card shout liability at 5-9, and then you're going up to 6-6, 7-0 for Chelsea defenders. I still love Chelsea defense, and they have so many good fixtures for a clean sheet perspective. But
love. I think we both want both. Right.
I want three of both, and I want to play 6-0-2.
Yeah, I'd kill for that formation. But when we're comparing, looking at
the, the price is king to me, and I think that the City assets, given the price, is just where to go right now because the fixtures are equally outstanding for City.
Yeah, and I think, and if you're comparing Stones and Otamendi, you got to go Stones, even though it's fucking Stones, and he's
Stounge.
In the Stounge. He's the joke of the world, and FPL sore from last season. But like you said with Luiz, it's a red card shout. Otamendi's a fucking red card shout every game. Like, he is an absolute psychopath, and he's actually racking up the yellows to back it. I mean, he's probably gonna get a yellow ban, but you know, he just needs two more yellows in the next 11 game weeks, and he's gonna get a red one of these games. They're basically equal on in the BPS bonus point system, so I would just go Stones. Like, he's harmless. He wouldn't hurt a fly, dude. He's just there. He's just happy that someone thinks he's good at football, so he gets to play.
Yeah, I mean, he just has dildos and dicks thrown at his face. They just bounce off. He's still smiling. He doesn't give a
fuck. Forgot about that. What was that again? Where did dildos get thrown at his face come from?
I don't know. I think Kyle Walker's also an interesting one, though, at 6'5", because he's going to be getting those side pass assists.
Well, that's the thing.
He's king of that.
It's like when we're talking about every defense, there's like the value guys, which are almost always exclusively center backs, and then there's the actual best pick who's going to score the most points, and that's probably, in this case, Kyle Walker on Chelsea, Alonso, Azpilicueta maybe, Moses maybe. Yeah, Walker gets assists, yeah.
Yeah, so TLDR, both defenses are great. Wedge whomever you want. I think for a differential shout, doubling on either I would prefer to do than splitting your bets and going one-on-one just because I love that.
Well, Chelsea to me also much more than City. I think I'd rather have two Chelsea defenders than one Chelsea defender, one Chelsea attacker. Like we were saying all of last season, there's – the Chelsea attackers are kind of all overpriced and you're not getting good value. I mean, you can't really compare Chelsea's attack to Man City's attack. You know, I'd rather you could go double City attack without batting a fucking tit lash or whatever the expression is, and you're flying. You know, they're scoring the most goals in the league. They're by all stats, they deserve to be scoring the most goals in the league. Chelsea are like, yeah, they attack sometimes. They'll score some goals sometimes, but you know, they're not gonna like score 5 and 6 nils like City are unless they play that Stoke defense more times, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so let's look at that because a lot of people on wildcard this week, for example, definitely going 3 City, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
Do you go triple attack and get someone like Silva, Jesus, Sterling?
I think I would go
defender in there.
Jesus, Silva, Stones. That's at least how I would start the structure of my like City team.
Okay. And then same with Chelsea. It's kind of like Morata. I mean, Morata's a big question mark because we still don't have that much information. Pocono drew on Slack asking, what do we do with Morata? I mean,
well,
if he's
you,
be
you
off,
have Murata. What are you doing with Murata?
Well, I mean, right now they're talking about him being fit. They're trying to get him fit for the Roma game, meaning he's going to miss the weekend. I want to talk about this later because it's way too deep.
Okay, well, we'll do our teams after this
section.
Yeah,
it's too much. But I think, by and large, I'm not interested in Pedro, any of those fucking midfielders. I would have one or two Chelsea defenders if I was wildcarding, probably David Luiz, maybe Courtois if I could fund that. But City having three is a no question. You have to have three City players right now based on what they look like and the value, because there's a lot of value in the midfield. They have Jesus and Aguero were both priced at 10.5, 11.5, whatever the fuck before the season started, but no one thought that Sterling was going to be playing every day, and he's fucking priced at 8. Like, that's a gem. Silva's nailed. He's been rising, but he's still under 8.5. I mean, that's value. So I think I would probably go with the same that you said. You got to have Jesus in there with Aguero out, no question. And then probably Sterling and Stones. I would definitely think about doubling the defense and eschewing Sterling, though, because Sterling is a transfer waiting to happen. It's a very short-term move. When Aguero comes back, you know, I still am never convinced by him, no matter how centrally or far forward he's ever playing.
Yes.
I never think that he's going to come in with a brace like he's fucking Sterling.
Sporting app on Twitter said, how much does getting burned by a player in the past influence your transfers?
Oh,
and then follow-up question was, do you think Sterling can provide sustained returns? So we know who has burned him in the past. Like, he's not hiding it well.
That's just hilarious. That's a hilarious double question.
Yeah, it's a fantastic question.
But I mean, that's why I think, you know, you could go double defense and get Ederson and him, or Otamendi and Stones.
Right, Ederson,
and just stack
I didn't even
yourself.
Mention. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you just stack yourself for 11 million, and you're getting 8 points per clean for them. That's pretty big to me. Sterling's a piece of shit, so you could get someone else. I mean, there are plenty of good. Give me fucking Richarlison and 2 million in the bank for Sterling. He's 10 times the player.
So what are we doing? We're starting a team right now. Me and you are combined wildcarding a team of like Courtois, Luiz, Stones, Silva, Jesus. That's pretty sick.
No. It would be Courtois, Luiz, Stones, Otamendi, Ward, Fodder. We would have Lukaku, Kane. I don't know. Someone.
You don't want Jesus?
Some other. Yeah. Jesus. Good. Richarlison, some other guys, like some friends, you know, it'd be great.
Ah, this is a good team.
It's a good team. I could take a minus 30 and just get it right now.
Yeah, I have wild card. I could just pop it. Pop a little Papa John's for you.
I think another thing we got to talk about is United. You know, we got the four perceived tough fixtures coming up. Got Liverpool, Huddersfield, which is as good as it gets, but then Spurs, Chelsea, game weeks 10 and 11.
Tough.
Everyone's got at least two assets. Lukaku in a lot of teams, Mkhitaryan in a lot of teams, Jones, potentially another defender in some teams. What are you doing? What do you think?
I mean, I think we're both in the same boat, right? You only have Lukaku, Jones.
Yeah.
I think they're just set and forget for the fucking season until one of them gets injured or loses their spot. I mean, they're both such good picks, such consistent returners. And we know from Moo's past that the more difficult the fixture, the more he's going to, you know, just shut down a game and play for a 0-0 or a 1-0. So those games are as good of clean sheet shots as any. You know, it's going to be full on like Herrera ripping jerseys off of people's backs and Fellaini fucking like kneeing people in the balls, just like
Fellaini's out.
Time, you know what I mean, though. Time wasting from the beginning, like elbows flying everywhere. Like, it's just going to be a mess. But Phil Jones is still going to be racking up cleans, I think, and bonus points. So I don't even look at the fixtures when I'm considering Phil Jones in this defense. Lukaku, I mean, I mentioned earlier, I think you could make a very tangible case that, you know, someone like Alexis outscores him in the short term, or maybe even Jesus outscores him in the short term, but it's not really worth a lateral transfer that way, I don't think. And, you know, I mean, at Liverpool is not a bad fixture. They're letting up goal, goals like crazy. We talked about this last week. At Huddersfield's an incredible fixture. Spurs-Chelsea is not great. But then right after that, Lukaku's like almost a must-own with home, Newcastle, home, Brighton, at Watford. So you're going to just transfer a guy out for two fixtures? It's not really – doesn't make sense. Like, free transfers are more valuable than that, than making a two-week, you know, punt out of them. So, I mean, for me, they're holds. If I had Mkhitaryan, I'd be bugging out and probably rage transferring him out. But even Mkhitaryan, I mean, someone asked me earlier today about taking a hit to take him out, and I was like, no way. No. There's just no way. Like, not with these
fixtures. He's not injured.
He's not injured. He's still nailed. He's going to start, even if he only plays 70 minutes. You know, no Pogba. He's still going to be, like, maybe the farthest forward midfielder. He's still, you know, a good shout for returns in these, you know, if you're looking more than just the next four, if you're looking the next seven game weeks, he has a really good chance of returning in a lot of those fixtures. So you hold him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you're talking about a hit for Mkhitaryan.
I'm talking about a hit.
Just,
that's a different thing.
All right. So we'll box that. But I want to go back to, you know, the defense. I agree with you. I think that there really aren't any bad fixtures for the Mourinho defense right now, the way they look. Nothing would be less surprising than them playing three center backs, five back against Liverpool this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Mourinho could just point to the injuries that he suffered and he couldn't do anything else, and they just shut up shop to play for a 0-0 or a 1-0 on the counter. But
Herrera, red card, nailed.
Yeah, but I think something with Lukaku that I've been going around and around in circles in my head about is that when it comes down to it, we watch the games, we see how players look, and we base our decisions on FPL based on what we see. And we see players play poorly, and then we get rid of them. We see players play well, and we want to get them in. Lukaku has played poorly all season, and he is at right up there at the top point scorers for forwards in the game. There's no disputing that. Every fucking FPL podcast you listen to, listener, says the same thing. Scoutcast, every fucking outfit.
I haven't listened to him.
He's fucking bad every game, but he scores every game. Yep. So they will be bad against the good teams. He will continue to look bad because he's a fucking donkey. But he fucking scores. And
well, here's the thing also. Kind of, it's like, another way to look at that, even a more like glasses half full point of view, is like, he's not always this bad. You know, he has runs of good form. If he's scoring every week and he looks this bad, like, that just means when he's in form, when he has those, you know, like, we've all had Lukaku in the past. He has hat trick, four goal potential when he was on Everton. That's gonna come also. You know, he didn't just like lose that. He's playing like fucking absolute shit. He looks like the slowest, worst player on the pitch, and he's scoring every week. There's going to be a hat trick soon. One, you know, one within the next.
Yeah, no, I. There's 100%.
He's going to score 100%.
He will have a hat trick by December. There's no question about that.
Yeah. So you know,
and like, it's, that's the kind of thing, is that, yeah, fixtures, good, bad, whatever. He's in one of the best teams in the league. He's in or out of form. It doesn't matter. He's still scoring. There's just no reason to not have him. You're overthinking it. You're trying to be too clever. You're not going to win FPL by going differential in game week 8. He's highly owned. He's been doing it every week. There's just no reason to get rid of him. You're trying to overthink and out-clever the field, and you're just going to get burned. So I mean, think
we're coming from two guys who both agreed together on this pod to get rid of Mahrez in the Mahrez magical season when he was dropped and he was out of form and Leicester weren't scoring, and he fucking destroyed us. He took us to town. You know,
I mean, this is our MO.
Like, yeah, this
we
is our
look
lesson
at
learned.
This and we say, okay, these fixtures are bad. He's not going to keep it up. Let's get this rogue differential. And then he does okay. Our differential sucks because he's a differential for a reason. Because he fucking sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Because no one has him. And then we just get fucked. And it's not worth it. Like, give me the differentials at the fourth defender spot. Like, give me the Davis Hall and then the Ward Hall. And then I'm flying. And I'm playing the long game. still 30 weeks to go. Getting rid of Lukaku is just fucking madness to me.
It's a bit of madness. You look at some people's wildcard tinkers that they've sent in. I mean, honestly, Eddie from Slack is coming to mind because his strike force right now is fucking Hossolu, Mitrovic, and Kane. I'm just like, dude, I don't know. That is fucking madness.
Like, yeah, I think he had one of them in just for price holding or something.
Oh, I thought that was his actual team.
No, he had one of them in just
Okay, sorry, Eddie. Fucking mug winner Eddie knows more than me anyway.
But in general, I got on a little tangent there. We talk about Lukaku a lot. It's a little bit annoying.
He's very relevant. He's probably the highest owned. He's going to be the highest owned player in all of FPL for the entire season, I would say.
Yeah. And then I think last thing I wanted to really talk about before we got into our teams the weekend, blah, 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 is the third striker spot continues. I think it's just kind of theme from last season where we couldn't find that budget third striker option that we could kind of set and forget like we've been used to in 3-4 seasons past.
Yeah, we found him for very little, and then he got injured.
Yeah.
Chaz Austin, rip.
This season, you know, I have Morata in at my third striker. I've got 3 10-million-plus players up top, and the balance on the side really suffers. And I find myself thinking I'm not going to be making up enough points throughout the squad when I have 35 million invested in my strike force. So I keep looking at the fucking forwards in the game, and other than Jamie Vardy, twat mode, from 8-5 and under, I see an absolute vast piece of shit everywhere.
Yeah, your namesake Joe Walsh tweeted in, is there any point starting mid-price strikers, or is there money better spent elsewhere?
There's just absolutely nothing.
It's just dog shit. Right?
I spent like 20 minutes today looking at Rashford.
I have him written down on my list right now. Rashford,
yeah, and then he's the guy. But then I went to the United fan forum, and the first four teams I saw did not have him in there, and I was like, okay, like that tells me all I need.
Yeah, how the fuck do they not have him in there? I mean, he's only blanked.
They don't have him in there because Martial is fucking five times the player.
Yeah,
I mean, he shouldn't be in. He should not be in the team. Rashford should not be starting for them.
He's good though.
Yeah, he's definitely great, but he's fucking 10 years old, and Martial is five times the player. So, I mean, he's an actual midfielder, and the team would be better if he was playing. But anyway, there are no good players. I mean, you have like King, Wood, King may be injured now, Defoe. I mean, it's just there's Abraham. He's bad. Rooney's fucking bad again.
Andy Carroll? Are you still in on him?
No, come on. There's nothing. I mean, there's really nothing.
I mean, yeah, Hossolu's getting a lot of big chances. Whatever. I stand by the fact that I'd rather spend 4.5 on a dead player who it doesn't even exist in the league and spend my money elsewhere and start two up top.
So that's where I would like to go is, I mean, is that the move? I mean, is the team with a 10.5 million third striker better than a team where you have a 4.5 million third striker and you put 6 million into your defense and midfield and you go either 3-5-2 or 4-4-2?
I think the striker way is better. I think three heavy hitting is better. I just think the idea of a balanced squad just like feels good. You know, it like looks good.
It feels good.
You're like, I have a good defense. I have a good midfield. Like, oh, this is a good like fucking FIFA team and it's balanced. And like, oh, I'm Pep Guardiola of FPL, dude. Like, this is fucking sick. But like, it doesn't actually matter. I just want like the three guys I have right now, Kane, Lukaku, Jesus, like, they might be the three highest scoring players in all of FPL by the end of the season. Like, is that good? It seems pretty fucking good. Fuck balance. I don't give a shit. I'll have like all of the Chalabas with all the three highest scoring players on my team. You know, I don't care.
So you like the three heavy hitters up top?
I like the three heavy hitters. I mean, forwards, like last year was the anomaly where like midfielders kind of ruled. Forwards traditionally have been the highest scoring players, And I think this year, with the crop of forwards that we have up top, which is like five or six guys, you know, given Aguero and Morata are hurt right now, five or six guys who are like legit captain most weeks, and the amount of like bottom fucking shit ass sides that are in the league, like, I just think they're just going to keep flying. Like, I think we're talking about Lukaku just now. We both have the same feelings. We both shouted Kane earlier as like an almost must have. And then, like, you know, Jesus, Morata, Lacazette, they're all cheaper than Hazard and Sanchez, and they're all incredible. And Kun is the number one scoring guy, you know, and he's hurt, so he'll be back soon. I don't know. I just think this is just the year of the forward for me, year of defenders and forwards.
Forwards in.
Yeah, I mean, just, forwards are fucking in, dude. I mean, I don't know.
All right, bruh.
I mean, like, you never know. Like, it's still relatively early in the season. Maybe shit will change. But in this moment, I want all of the forwards.
Can't see past the forwards.
I just can't see past the top guys. I just think they're all unbelievably good and incredible picks.
All right, dude. So let's go to our teams and wrap this because we're getting long. So
let me see if there's any other big question. Oh, this was one more good question. There's a lot of questions.
Better be good.
I like this one. Well, he's also a new ass slob, so it's good to shout him out. Luke Benson, absolute legend. He said he wanted us to compare weekly enjoyment versus our final position. He said, "I'm less concerned about 4-point hits this year. It's worth it if I'm buzzing about my team going into the game week." So Benson's just taking hits every week.
Yeah, I mean, taking hits is the same as just blowing lines of coke.
Yeah, it's just shooting your vein direct line in. Just, yeah.
Well, that's heroin. I was talking about coke, but
you know what I mean.
That it's an outstanding feeling. If you want to take hits, it's fun. You do it. You know, you just fucking do it. And then your team's always better because you're not like bringing players in who suck. So you're always going to be happier with your team, but the cost is there to be seen. I mean, you're going to take hits and then you're going to come out minus 20 instead of like minus 4 because the guy you transferred out like scores and the guy you brought in gets a fucking Britos red card.
So and the guy you transferred in gets hurt midweek and then a minus 4 turns into a minus 12 and then you're fucking... it's just that the drug analogy just lives on, you know? And before you know it, you're just sucking dick in the back alley just for a taste of De Gea, you know? But it's really fun. When you're up, you're up. And when you're down, you're down, man.
Fuck. You always want to get that sex tape with De Gea.
Exactly, yeah, I mean.
Maybe a little Matthew Valbuena popping out of the closet. Oh my you don't God, know. I forgot you don't know what you're about say. That shit, dude.
We're dipping back in a fantasy Europod. Holy shit.
Could go anyway.
Classic shit.
So going our teams, like Morata's kind of the thing. So they're talking about getting him for Roma. I haven't gotten rid of him. I'm leaning towards saving him or just holding him and saving the free because I can't get to Jesus unless if I take a hit, which I don't want to do. And I don't want Vardy because fuck Vardy, and I don't want anyone else. So I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and it seems like he's just going to miss one game.
Yeah.
And if he only misses one game, it's absolutely 100% the correct decision, I think, to keep him.
Yeah. It's just it's a hypothetical because they're trying to get him fit for Roma. I mean, if that's the information that we have come deadline, you know, they could all of a sudden be he wasn't ready. And then all of a sudden it's like a late fitness check for the weekend, you know. And then he doesn't start. He's on the bench. Like, we've seen this with Baines in the past where
he's
seemingly going to start next week and then he's out for fucking a month. So it's a tough one, like, balancing that, but...
Yeah, it could avalanche out of control, but...
Yeah, it could do. So I'm still going to wait to see kind of what information I get at the weekend, but as of right now, I have Stevens who could come in for maybe a three-pointer against Everton, which feels fine, but I don't really want to drop down to Vardy or go anywhere else with the spot.
What happened to your Vardy, love? I feel like you just a week ago were like kind of into him.
I don't know. I have a hard time with Vardy just because Leicester, you know, they're a mid-table side at best.
Leicester's bad.
Yeah, and I don't think they're bad. I think they're going to finish 12th.
But they've been bad.
But I think, you know, 12th, 11th, that's probably where they're going to finish. He's priced at 8.5, which on balance, based on what he did in their title-winning season, seems okay. But based on what he did last season, is not a bargain. I mean, that's market price. You know, he's not an explosive player. And he's scored some goals against tough sides so far, but I just don't get excited by him. And
yeah, I mean, they've had an incredibly difficult schedule, and now they have a really good run. I think the case can be made for Vardy, but again, if there's a chance that Morata's just missing one match, I think Morata is that much better than him, as you're pointing out, kind of.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing where Vardy's like a very obvious move just because he's somewhat in form and their fixtures get better. But I also don't know what good or bad fixtures are like for Leicester, because they
I was
play
thinking
on
the same thing, especially for a guy like Vardy who relies so heavily on countering and pace, which you think kind of plays into the fact that maybe he can like brace against Arsenal and score against Chelsea and Liverpool on the counter. You know, but he blanks against Bournemouth and Brighton. You know, it's like, I don't know. I don't know if a good fixture is good for Vardy. I see home West Brom and at Swansea, two buses, and I'm like, is that really good for Vardy? He's not, like, going to skillfully break down a team, you know? And there's not space to run behind those teams. So I'm not really sure.
Right. And for those reasons, I'm just not that interested.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't fault that. We'll both be fucking clenching our ass cheeks, though, and hoping he doesn't score, because everyone's bringing him in, it seems like.
Yeah, he's making his way into a lot of teams.
Yeah, we need him to blank.
Yeah, but I think more often than not, if news becomes a little more pessimistic towards the end of the week, that I would rather take a hit to get Jesus in than downgrade him to Vardy. So we'll see, but I mean, that's really where I'm at. My team's fine. You know, Brady needs shifting, but overall I like my defense, and I mean, I'm in good shape. You know, I mean, I'm either going to save and play a shitty ass team this week and bench Morata, or maybe I'll do something like Foster down to a 4-0 and bump Morata to Jesus, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's really all it's really just about Morata.
That's good. And that's a good position to be in.
Obviously, Captain Kane. What are you looking at?
I mean, I just realized, I think I forgot to mention on last pod that I made my transfer on fucking Sunday. I made my transfer during game week 7. The day after the Man City game, there was all the Mendy news. Already was out. He was dead. We already knew that. And Davies was coming off a fucking million pointer. And I just was, fuck it, I'm just doing Mendy to Davies right now. Make sure I catch the Davies price rise. And another reason why I did it so early is that I have wild card still. So if it ended up burning me and I had guys get injured on international break or whatever, I would just pop wild card and just solve that. I ended up, you know, coming out safe from international break. So I'm pretty good right now too. I mean, I have the same issue with Brady. I wish he was Richarlison, maybe home West Ham, he'll get something. But my team is pretty fucking stacked, I think. So I'm pretty fine right now. I mean, I'll have to make a couple decisions for lineup lambs, but otherwise I'm good to go right now. I'm captaining Kane. Defense is coming around. Good fixtures. I have Lukaku, Kane, Jesus. I don't think you can get any better than that. So I'm pretty good right now.
What do you think about Foster versus Elliott? Big question in my mind for my team.
For your team for this week?
Yeah, Foster's got...
I'd go Elliott.
Elliott.
I just think it's the best... that's like one of the best fixtures in the league at Southampton. Yeah, and Newcastle have been, honestly, good defensively. Like, they're letting up... They only have a couple cleans, but they've been tough, you know? They're not letting up a lot of goals. I think... This run of at Southampton, home Palace, at Burnley, home Bournemouth, I see some cleans there.
See some cleans for Nukes.
Maybe I'm just too hopeful, but I don't know. Fuck West Brom, dude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Vardy and Twat mode, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But we're both on Captain Kane, right? Is there anyone else worth shouting for captaincy?
Alexis, I think, is the only other.
Yeah, Watford, that's pretty sexy. Yeah. He's going to be fucking pissed after Chile got knocked out of the World Cup.
But he just played tonight, and they're fucking at Watford is just salivating that fixture.
Yeah, that's quite a fixture. Is it still just going to be like Cabasele and Mariapa? Like, that's fucking good.
I mean, Britos was fit, and he named him to the bench, so clearly he likes what he's been seeing out of converted left back and his fifth center back.
Oh,
suddenly are good. I don't know.
Yeah, that's not good.
Ugh, I can't believe how bad all the forwards are, man. It's very sad. I wanted a little Josh King action. There's just nothing good there.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, 5 weeks from now there are some guys, but that's just where we are right now. You know, the Owls are not what they seem. Like, any day now, there's going to be some dips in forms and some of the top guys, and fucking Gray and Defoe start scoring, and Chaz Austin has his starting spot, and we're switching up our tune. But for now,
yeah, but that was like,
for
that
now
was,
there's nothing.
Even with Gray, like I wanted to keep an eye on him last week because I was trying to scout, and he fucking doesn't start.
He gets benched. Yeah,
it's insane. There's no against West Brom. You'd think that that's tailor made for him because he's not a fucking oaf against oaf center backs. He's like tricky and fast. He just benched him. So it's just so many non-starters everywhere. It's out of control.
Yeah.
This is, I think, the least diverse forward group I've ever seen since playing FPL for
fifth season. Just like no one slipped through the cracks is really what we're seeing. You know, it's like
there are no good players is what we're seeing. I mean,
but I
outside
feel like
of the
in
premiums,
normal seasons, like some of these guys who are 8-ish would be 6'5", and we'd maybe be a little bit interested, you know. But there's just nothing there. There's really just fucking nothing there.
And premium or just don't bother.
Just sort the forwards by goals, and the first guy who's less than 10 million and not named Vardy is Welbeck, and then Okazaki and Chicharito, who hasn't, you know,
he's
not
playing
even,
reverse out
he's
of
not
position.
Even playing striker, and he's getting pulled early and shit. Tomer Hemed and Vokes. It's like, what the fuck is this, dude?
All right, let's get out of here. This is running low.
This is ugly. Ugly forward line, dude. Holy shit. All right, let's slap some asses. Yeah, this is a long pod. We got our patrons of the week, people who donated, subscribed this week to our patreon.com/FMLFPL. They get the prerequisite slap on the anus. So first we got Jaakko Kosonen, and we got Simon Norheim. Simon, S-I-M-E-N. I like that. Anthony Sharp, Taryn Kurian, and Luke Benson. Aforementioned Luke Benson. Thanks so much.
Yeah, and for Prize League, we're going to be starting new month.
Oh, yes.
New scoring. New scoring for next game week, so it's going to be reset.
Yeah,
October.
If you join the Prize League by the game week 8 deadline, then you're in for the October mug. And whoever scores the most points in October in the league gets a fucking mug.
Yeah, and it's only 3 game weeks.
So
it's a very small sample.
Who's going to join and just burn all of their chips is what I want to know.
It's someone on Slack is going to do
Someone's going to do that, right? Just
someone.
Free hit Dave in, Colin, triple captain, bench boost, boom.
And pass. Someone's doing
someone's
it.
Someone's going to do it, and they're going to get destroyed by someone else.
And then we're going to spend $40 to ship it to fucking ass-fuck Australia or something.
I got that Jordan Forster, the winner, I get quoted at fucking $83. With tracking today.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's good.
My God.
It's what we signed up for, is sending $100 mugs to our listeners.
$100 mugs only here at FMLFPL Studios. Right. Check us out at FMLFPL.com. Follow us on Twitter at FMLFPL. Support us at patreon.com/FMLFPL. And cheers.